Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Busby Bay podcast. I'm Nathan Heinschel, covering for Colin Dams, who apparently is too busy for you, the great people of our podcast listenership. However, I'm still joined by Polly Questel here. Polly, how you doing?
I'm good. I had an interview this morning with some guy in Ireland about his master's thesis. So quoting me is now considered scholarly work.
Oh, man, we can't let that go to your head. Everyone in the comments.
It's in the head. I could be quoted in a published scholarly journal.
Yeah, I'll never forget when I was an intern right out of college. I wrote a piece on an Australian field hockey player, and she played for VCU here in Richmond. And the local newspaper wanted to republish the article because she was from a town of like 2,000 people. And so I've really been milking the fact that I'm internationally published for a long time. And now I got the Busby Babe, obviously, where I just shit post about my favorite team. But anyway, to update everybody, show rundown for today, we're going to recap the Brighton game, which was quite a bit of fun to watch. We're going to preview the Bournemouth game. We got a voicemail that we are going to react to, a little bit of house cleaning. And of course, as you listen to this podcast, you're going to hear Polly and I live react. We're watching the West Ham United Chelsea game right now. It's in the roughly about the 66th, 67th minute, depending on which person you're talking to. Polly's a little farther ahead than I am. And right now it is 2-1 in favor of West Ham after Everton already beat Leicester. So there's no way that this is going to go the way that we want it to, because too many things have already happened the way we want it. But yeah, Polly.
What would you trade? Would you trade the score staying the way it is? Or if it doesn't stay the way it is, but we're guaranteed for Sheffield to beat Tottenham?
Ooh, that's a toughie. I don't know. I want to see Chelsea lose. I don't like them. I was also really mad about the Manchester City game last week. So, yeah, come on. I'm blowing bubbles right now in my room right now as we record. I need the West Ham win. And yeah. Something
the problem
I've noticed
is that our hopes and dreams about this game are going to die just like bubbles in the wind or air, however that song goes.
I'll tell you what, too, watching this game, thank God Mason Mount's number is in the teens, because if he was wearing a number in the 20s as well, I would never know if it was him or Pulisic on the pitch.
Yeah, like
they are the same person.
The seed is strong within them.
Like, they have the exact, like, the fade goes up to the same point. When you're on that broadcast camera, I mean, you really got no shot of figuring out who's who.
Yeah, the difference is Pulisic is better at coming closer to scoring, or actually scoring. Mount is just he likes to tee off from wherever, whenever. Like, he's Bruno Fernandes, but with not quite the ability of Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah, and it's been super weird watching him all of a sudden find his form coming back from injury, because every time he succeeds, you want to be happy as fans of the U.S. men's national team like we are, but at the same time, it's like negatively impacting the other thing that we care about. So,
I don't care about that.
No?
No, I don't, because like, he's almost like Michael Bradley at this point. If you're the coach, there's no, and not Michael Bradley, the current Michael Bradley, but like 2011, 2010, 2011, 2012 Michael Bradley, like, it doesn't matter if he's playing well or not. You can't leave him out of the team. So if Pulisic goes and he doesn't get a run of games for Chelsea, or he plays poorly, like if Greg Berhalter leaves him out of the team, like, I'm sorry, goodbye, see ya. Like, you just can't do that. It's not like Matt Miazga or John Brooks, where they have to play out of their mind good to somehow get a nod over Walker Zimmerman. And even then, like, okay, wow, Pulisic is dominating for Chelsea, but Greg still doesn't know how to use him. So I don't care how good you are. If Berhalter can't put you in a good situation when you get on the field for the U.S. team, your form's going to go out the window.
Yep, and Tyler Adams, of course, could become the next Roy Keane, and Berhalter will still try and play him right back. But before we get too far off topic here and talking about the U.S. men's national team, we normally have to save that for the end of the episode. Let's recap that Brighton game. So marking the second in three games that Manchester United has beaten a team, 3-0. Got there a little bit differently than compared to the Sheffield game, but just looking at it from the surface, a real nice bounce back after what was undoubtedly just an incredibly frustrating game against Norwich City. What were your initial thoughts watching that Brighton game, Paulie?
Boredom? Really? I mean, look, and I mean this in the best possible way of, like, they went and took care of business. It was a little boring because they didn't hound Brighton with shots. They only took 12 shots or 13 shots all game. Not a problem because they were in complete control, and it wasn't like, you know, they had all the possession in the world, and it wasn't like, you know, those Van Gaal games where they were just cycling possession and getting nothing out of it, and it was frustrating. It was just, hey, like, they weren't taking bad shots. They were taking good shots. You know, Bruno took two or three from outside the box. Bruno took two from outside the box. Both of them were good. Rashford took one that he missed awfully, but it was a good shot. It was, you know, even I was, he put that on his right foot, and I said, rip it. McTominay took one from outside the box that should have been a goal, but great save, but he hit that one ferociously that took a wicked deflection. So, Jesus Christ. Yeah, Willian. Right after Christian Pulisic just went, you didn't see me react, but Christian Pulisic won this free kick, like Derek Jeter's catch where he caught the ball in fair territory and then ran all the way and dove into the stands against the Red Sox. Christian Pulisic, there was contact, and then he took about three steps and then did full Superman dive, and Willian buries the free kick. But anyway, back to the United game. It was just very thorough, very walk in the park-esque. And
I just saw the goal. Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God.
This is why we want to start doing live streams, guys. Because when it's actually United and we're talking about the players and the games and what we see, I think it'll be golden. So hopefully we can get that going for Bournemouth. So that's something to look forward to. Instead of a live thread.
Though. He still got it. Look at that.
Instead of a live thread, we could have a live. But anyway, scoreline changed. So now I mean this in the highest possible regard of United just took care of business, and that's what it was. You know, it's like going, it would be like go pick a fun destination. Pick a fun destination, Europe, Italy, Disney, Orlando, you know,
maybe not right now
in a non-COVID world, like a city that you've never been to, where it's like, wow, that's a fun, I'm going to get to go, but it's a business trip. And you go and you go to the office, you do your work, and, you know, maybe you get to eat dinner one night, but that's it. That's what this seemed like. And I mean that as a compliment. It was the first time I watched it back again this morning, and it was the first time where I, you know, by the time the second half rolled around, I wasn't really paying attention anymore, and I didn't really focus on the second half. I got what I needed to write up the tactical analysis about the game, and you know, it just wasn't holding my attention compared to the Tottenham game, where even in the second half, you know, there were things that were still frustrating or things that changed, or the Sheffield game, which was, you know, the same thing. This was it was just boring, and I mean that again, I mean that as a compliment. They took care of business.
Yeah, and I think taking care of business is the best way to describe it, because, you know, leading up to the game, when Colin and I did our preview for Brighton, we were debating on maybe who do you potentially put on the bench, give him a rest. You know, our concern was that Bruno Fernandes had played so many minutes inside an eight-day period. And so we had suggested maybe benching him. And, of course, we all looked like fools as we said that, because Bruno Fernandes netted two goals and, you know, for all intents and purposes had a, you know, huge effect on the game. That was the schools of thought. It was like, do we try and do some more squad rotation against a team that we should be able to beat no matter, you know, what our 11 looks like? Or do we just go in, blitz them, kill a game off, and then, you know, sub out all the important people at around the 50 or 60th minute? And, of course, the latter is what happened. I mean, for the most, Mason Greenwood puts in his goal in the 16th minute, which was phenomenal. And then Bruno Fernandes gets his in the 30th minute. At that point, Brighton was without industry, and it really looked like at that point it was Manchester United's game to win. Going to halftime, Bruno gets his goal in the 50th minute, all of a sudden we're looking at 3-0 and, you know, Ollie's doing a hockey line change. So I think for the most part, it was exactly what you said. The reason why maybe we're not as enthused in the game is a good thing, because they just ended the game 50 minutes in, and then we had to watch the Andreas Pereira show. And if anything, what's important about that game, watching it, was we got to see both Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in that game, and we got to see it in a good way, where we saw the good stuff, game was over, we didn't have to worry about anything else, and then at the end of the game, we got to see, once again, like, where there's still definitely squad improvement needs at the end of the day. Like, yeah,
There was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and Pereira, too. I mean, he gave the ball away for a really good chance that Matic ended up cleaning up on, and then setting up, I think it was the second Dan James chance, it was the McTominay shot, was set up by Pereira moving around, creating an angle, and playing a beautiful ball to Brandon Williams. So I'll give credit where credit's due. That was a fantastic play by a very good ball by Pereira, but a lot of bad from Pereira too.
Yeah, and so I think that's where the juxtaposition comes in the game, where we saw a lot of good things, saw some boring things, saw a couple more things where I'm sure when Ollie's watching that game from the stands, he's like, I can't wait to replace you and you and you and bring in these people. Because all of a sudden you mentioned it today in our group chat, the Football Ramble, great podcast. If any of our listeners haven't checked it out, highly recommend it, but they're generally not as kind to Manchester United, and they're usually pretty rough. I mean, there's no United fans on that podcast generally, so why should they? But all of a sudden, we're starting to see United get praised from outlets that don't normally praise them. You know, ESPN FC always has a pretty shitty thing to say about them. But Craig Burley, for a while during that Norwich City game, you know, was struggling to find bad things to say. So all signs are pointing forward. So at this point, it's like, all right, let's get those last couple pieces that we need. And secure some Champions League football beforehand and see what happens in 2021.
It just goes to show you that, what they say in the radio or in the media business is losing sells. When you lose, people want to complain. People want to, you know, yell and scream up to the heaven and demand changes. And this game was such a thorough shellacking or job.
That's why Arsenal Fan TV is so successful.
Right. And this was such a thorough job well done. There's really not much to say about it. I did have one issue towards the end of the game, and people were like, "You're nitpicking," and I was like, "Yeah, I am." But here I have a take here, and I'll get to it in a minute. But the other thing was about Bruno Fernandes. You know, I wasn't on the last show, but I've been very active in the Facebook in the Slack channel, and I've been very active online about this. I thought Bruno Fernandes was terrible against Tottenham. You know, it wasn't just the passing percentage, which was awful. And I, you know, I've said it many times. I know he makes risky passes and I get it. And that's not what bothers me, that he gives the ball away. It's the decision making of which pass to make and when he decided to shoot. I thought he had a lot to prove against Sheffield. And I thought he played fine against Sheffield, and other people were out there being like, "Oh, this is a pretty poor game from Bruno." And then, you know, against Norwich, I don't hold anything against Norwich against him, because, you know, McTominay and Fred can't get him the ball the same way they couldn't get Pogba the ball at the end of last season. And when he has the ball and his options are give it to Lingard or give it to Mata, who has no pace, he can't, you know, if you're a creative player, you can only be as good as your teammates. This is what I said, like, I tweeted it on Saturday during the game. Like, he's probably going to go out to dinner with Pogba Saturday night and just say, "Dude, now I understand what you were going through." Or Pogba was going to take him out to dinner and say, "This is what I was dealing with at the beginning of the season. You know, I pass here, pass there, and nobody finishes." And Bruno would be like, "Yeah, I understand why you might want a new challenge, because, you know, the quality of players that he was playing against was terrible." So I don't hold anything against him there. I did think, though, considering that every time I said prior to the Tottenham game, Paul Pogba should be walking. Like, if you're picking this based on ability or form or anything, you know, form should go out the window because we haven't played in 3 months. If you're picking this based on ability or even what they did during the season, Paul Pogba should be in that starting 11. And all the responses I got were, "Well, no, McTominay and Bruno and Fred, you know, they've earned their chance and they shouldn't be dropped. And you get that, well, there's so many games coming up, you can't have everybody play all every game, you'll burn them all out. Okay, so by that same token of logic of, if you want to create this, everybody has to earn their place in the team culture. And you also want to say, well, there's so many games and we can't burn people out. I really thought Bruno Fernandes should have been rested against Brighton. And I completely agree with you and Colin. You know, 120 minutes at the weekend, I thought, you know, they were probably going to take him off against Norwich. And then as soon as Norwich tied it, you had to leave him on, not just because you needed the attacking prowess, but because he's your best penalty taker. So you got to think long term that way. So I get why he played 120 minutes. And but, you know, I didn't think his performances merited dropping. Oh, I didn't think his performances merited dropping. But I also didn't think he was on such good form that you were like, man, we can't afford to take him out of the 11. So I would have said you rest him against Brighton because you have Pogba, Rashford, Greenwood, Martial. That should be enough to beat Brighton. And let me tell you, Bruno Fernandes, oh boy, did he prove me wrong. He was not just great, but it was his energy all over the field. He had 30 presses. That's more than anybody else. Martial at 18, Rashford 17, Wan-Bissaka 18. Bruno, 30. Like, that's incredible. 13 in the middle third, 12 in the final. The guy did not stop running. He was an engine. He gets on the end of that cross for the second goal. Like I said before, yeah, he took some shots from outside the box. Both of them were good shots. It wasn't just, hey, let me tee up. You know, the decision-making has definitely improved since then. The pass percentage is still low, and I'd really like to see that get improved, because some of these are simple passes where it's like, come on, dude, like, nobody's perfect, but like, you got to make that pass. But he definitely proved me wrong. I don't see why you drop him against Bournemouth. Somewhere along the line, everybody needs a breather, because we're playing two games a week. But if you're only going to play an hour twice a week, like, you know, that's fine. I think you could survive that way. And somewhere along the line, maybe you get him a breather. And that depends on if Leicester keep dropping points. You know, maybe by the time we're playing Crystal Palace, I think that's the second to last game of the season. Like, we could be 4 points clear. You know, like, we could be clear enough of Leicester that it doesn't matter as much. Or maybe when we're playing Leicester, we're 4 points clear and we don't need to play him. So, yeah, kudos to him. He definitely went out there and proved me wrong.
Yeah, and I think rest is a you know, one of the driving factors of – that's why we need to be advantageous and take our chances early and kill these things off quickly, because, you know, you got Bournemouth on the weekend, so about 4 days rest after that, and you get your key guys off after the 60th minute, which is important. You'd like to think after what Bournemouth did against Newcastle this week, you know, they're in pretty bad shape. And once again, United, take care of business, get your people off, because 5 days later, you're going to Villa Park, and then 4 days after that, you're playing Southampton. And so it's just, these things are just coming quick. And we were talking about a guy like Matic, you know, almost treating him like a pitcher, where, you know, he's getting one start a week and then maybe he's coming off the bench and others. So this is going to be a real test for Ollie and his managerial style and how he wants to do things, of just how he's going to manage his guys through the stretch of the season. So that way, you know, everyone's coming relatively unscathed and we meet the goals that I'm sure he has set right now for, you know, how he wants to finish the season off too.
Yeah, it's definitely important. I didn't fear I know we lost to Bournemouth earlier this season, but I always figured when we got him back at Old Trafford, we would, even if Rashford wasn't fit again, even if Rashford wasn't fit yet, we were going to run them off the field. And now they just seem devoid of life. And I think that's really the way a lot of this in Project Restart is going. And it's, you know, it's why Sheffield are just dead. And now Sheffield were figured out beforehand. They were collapsing since, you know, the second half of the season. Every time as they played teams a second time, teams had really figured out their shtick, and it was just, they were so good in the first half of the season, and United and Chelsea and Wolves were so inconsistent that they let Sheffield hang around. But if you look at the table since Boxing Day, let me pull that up because I just tweeted it. But if you look at the table since Boxing Day, United are third in the table. Sheffield are down in 15th. So, I mean, part of that is Project Restart, but they're just different. A lot of the games I'm looking at, you know, when you watch these games, some of them are hard to watch because they're just so bad. And I think this is a lull. You know, Leicester also, I said Leicester were going to fade in the second half, that their regression. I didn't see a collapse coming. I saw regression coming. And that's exactly what has been happening. And now they're collapsing too. Everybody else, though, I say this as Chelsea are 2-2 with 5 minutes to go against West Ham. It's hard to see how bigger teams are going to drop points because there just doesn't seem to be anything kicking on for those smaller clubs. And I, you know, like Brighton beat United twice at the Amex last year and the year before that. And then they come in and they're just lifeless. And part of the reason for that, I think, is the energy of the crowd is just not there spurring on the players. You know, like if you're Brighton and you go into a challenge 5 minutes into the game and you win the ball, you know, Paul Pogba makes a run and he dribbles up and you go in there and you slide in and win the ball off of him, fans going to go nuts and you're going to shoot up with that energy and be so, and you're going to be like, right, where's my next challenge? Where can I go and where can I go make another challenge? Where can I run and get involved here? And when it's just an empty stadium, you go and you slide in, and even if you win the ball or you don't win the ball, it's, you get up lethargically and it's just like, right, all right. And you get back into jogging pace. It's like, where's the game going now? And I think that's going to hurt so many of these lower clubs. That it's hard to see where teams drop points, and United, that's good. I think more than they're just going to come, especially and if you look at what Brighton did at the end of the game yesterday. The last 15 minutes, you know, when Pogba and Fernandes came off, Brighton got a few chances. They didn't convert on them, and then with 15 minutes to go, that was it. Switched up. He said, you know, just nothing to get. They take on Norwich this weekend. Like, that's a big game. It's a winnable game. So that's big in the fight against relegation. So there's just no point in expending their energy against Manchester United. We saw Sheffield do it last week. Sheffield, within 10 minutes last week, they were like, right, we're going to play when we get the ball, but we're not going to expend our energy trying to win the ball back. And when we get the ball, then we'll do our thing. And then in the second half, they were just like, right, it's 2-0, it's 3-0. Let's just see this game out, save our energy for the next game. So you look at Bournemouth, you look at Aston Villa, who are in these relegation fights, and when they play United or Chelsea, it might be very easy for them to just be like, right, this is not our game. Like, and we've got a game coming up in 4 days that we need to be at our best for, that it's easy to see how these teams might mail it in because you don't have your fans egging you on to go out there and beat Manchester United. And you know that Premier League survival is more important and your shot at surviving the Premier League, because let's be honest, when you got the fixture list back in June, you penciled in that you weren't going to get any points in this game. You know, trip to Old Trafford, penciled that in for 0 points. So, oh, come on, finish this. Let's go. Screw it. People can drop points wherever.
Well, and to your point, too, with not having fans in the stands and how that might affect these, you know, lower in the table teams, it makes you wonder, what does that Norwich game look like on the weekend? If Carroll Road is full, you know, I think all of a sudden United finds themselves in a situation where, like what City found themselves in at the beginning of the season, especially after that Cantwell goal, it's 1-1 going into extra time. You know, you got to like Norwich chances. Oh, man, that was a really nice goal from West Ham. I'm finally seeing it now. Come on, blow some bubbles, baby. Come on, you Hammers. But yeah, anyway, I think at this point we can probably start transitioning over into our preview of the Bournemouth game. And as we've been kind of talking, looking at the table right now, Bournemouth sit in 19th with 27 points. Weirdly enough, though, they are tied with Aston Villa on points. Hopefully they are not tied with West Ham in the next 5 minutes at 27 points as well. But, you know, for a team that still has a fighting chance of getting out of relegation, it doesn't look like they're fighting for it. You know, they just played Newcastle today and they lost 4-1, and they scored a goal in the 94th minute. Newcastle is not they're a fine team. They are not a good team. They're certainly not a shell you for four goals kind of team. I mean, Newcastle's got a minus 10 goal differential right now. It's not like they're, you know, they have all this firepower that's going to blow you out of the water. And so it just makes you wonder, like, is there any fight left in that dog that is
now is their first goal in Project Restart?
Yeah. I mean, and you look at the Bournemouth lineup, and for the most part, they have the guys that they want playing. You've got Josh King in there.
Well, but what's his face is no longer playing now.
Yeah, but they don't have Brian Fraser because he said, I'm out. And they're like, well, I'm not going to play somebody who's not going to play for me. Which, you know, Eddie Howe, I guess, has his reasons. But at the same time, if you're fighting to not get relegated, maybe you still play your left winger that normally starts for you.
Well, now he's out of contract now. So, and he said, I'm not playing when I'm not under contract.
Yeah.
So he's definitely out now. Now he's out by player choice.
Yep. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of reasons to walk into this game feeling confident, which I don't like that feeling, because every time I feel confident about a United game, usually it doesn't go well.
And when have we felt confident about United games? I'll list them off for you.
Tottenham?
Well, yeah, Tottenham, but Tottenham is not one of the ones that fall under this category.
I was talking cash shit before that Tottenham game, and we were lucky to steal a point, and it was just like, all right, I gotta tune it down here.
What were the other games? Let me figure this. I don't remember the order, but I'm pretty sure I remember the order. Come on, stupid thing, load. What were the other times that we felt really, really confident? Everton at home.
Yeah.
Everton at home. And then Arsenal away. You know why? Because those are the only other two times. Oh, and Everton away. So those are the only
both
other
Everton
three
games,
times.
Yeah.
Those are the only other three times that we had an opportunity to win three in a row. And we have yet to do that since last, I believe, February. So like that's a reason that's, you know, like we said before the Tottenham game, everything points to a United win here, and that's what scares me.
Right. Yeah. That's the problem. We should be excited. And all of a sudden, like, United's getting talked up too much, and that's what makes me uncomfortable, even more than my own confidence in the team. It's the fact that people are talking about them. But, I mean, taking a look at it. So,
but Nathan, this is what United used to be. You know, Bournemouth coming into Old Trafford, and especially I used to call it the 10 a.m. Saturday match was the walk in the park game. That was when you played Bournemouth or when you played Aston Villa or when you played whatever, and that was a game where – in the 60th minute, it was 3-0, and Fergie made some changes, and one of the subs would come on and score to make it 4-0, and it was a walk-in. It was literally just business. That used to be a standard amongst United, and you know, I'm looking at the schedule right now. The last time we played a Saturday game at 10 o'clock or 3 o'clock out in the UK was Norwich City at home, and what was the score in that game? 4-0. So, you know, this is what United is. And I just don't know what Bournemouth have left in the tank, because I made this comparison in a group chat today and my friends were not happy with it. But I kind of said Eddie Howe kind of got Pochettino, essentially. You know, I'm saying, remember when Eddie Howe was being tabbed with all the best jobs, the England job, the Arsenal job,
the United job?
You know, it was for Liverpool, it was Jurgen Klopp or Eddie Howe. That was the final two. And I think he kind of just stayed in the same place trying to build something, and he stayed too long, and thus the message wore off. And I think that's what happened with Pochettino, is not that Pochettino lost his locker room. It's you need to do something to keep it fresh. That's what Ferguson always did. He always changed over a large part of the team. You know, he had Giggs and Scholes and Neville, Fernandinho, but you know, Van Nistelrooy was only here for 5 years. You know, there's plenty of players that came and went. Cantona was, how many years was Cantona here? Ronaldo was, you know, a big player. You know, he was here for 6 years. There was always something going, and he changed over his coaching staff all the time. So there was always a new message. And I think that's just at Bournemouth, it's maybe Eddie Howe's, message has gotten old. And, you know, the difference between him and Pochettino is going to land at a big place soon, eventually. I don't know when. I don't know who's changing their manager this season, other than Barcelona, because they're just throwing mud at the wall, basically, and seeing what sticks. Even then, Pochettino's not going there because he's Espanol until he dies.
Yep.
Eddie Howe is not going. I don't see somebody taking a chance on Eddie Howe, especially a Premier League team, because Eddie Howe seems to be the kind of guy who needs to come in there and, you know, lay down a foundation, and that takes time. You know, Arsenal are starting to kick it under Arteta, but they didn't do that right away. United under Solskjaer this year, third best team in the league since November, but what were we before November? So Pochettino will land on his feet. I don't know where Eddie Howe goes. He probably won't get fired because Bournemouth owe him a tremendous debt of gratitude, but they need to change over that squad. And I just think it's like a Batman, Harvey Dent, like, if he would have gotten out of there earlier, maybe better for everybody involved. But you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yeah, and with probably the shtick getting old with Eddie Howe too. I mean, Bournemouth are not a massive club, and so I think part of the problem that they run into then is, you know, it's difficult for them to refresh the squad because they just don't have the buying power that other teams have, and so it really kind of. It was a lose-lose situation. The more and more you stay loyal to that club, that, I mean, it was going to be quicksand for him. But, I mean, looking at this game, Manchester United against Brighton were able to sub off Bruno, Pogba, and Luke Shaw in the 65th minute, and they got Rashford and they got Martial off in the 78th minute. So you'd like to think that, as my friend Jalen has so lovingly coined them, the 11 of death, we should be very likely to start them against Bournemouth. And so I think we're running into the same situation as this Brighton game. You know, just blitz the hell out of them. Come in super, you know, ready to just press that team, control possession, and take good shots. And I don't see why, you know, we can't take a good, solid lead in the first and kill that thing off in the second, you know?
Yeah, it's exactly it. I could see there. I'm not going to call for Bruno Fernandes to be rested because, you know, he played an hour. And it's, you know, at this point, it's too good. Earlier this season, it's funny, every time United fielded an unchanged 11, they were terrible. And I believe they fielded an unchanged 11 from the City game to the Everton game. And now they field an unchanged 11 and just go out and dominate to a greater degree than they did the first part. I wouldn't be shocked if there's two changes made. I wouldn't be shocked if Fred comes in for Matic, given that it's Bournemouth at home and you know, this is the game to rest him and to try out that Fred Pogba axis. And Fred is really what's been happening is Matic has actually been, when we have the ball, he's been dropping in between Maguire and Lindelof and playing as a third center back. We've actually been playing more of like a 3-2-5 with Wan-Bissaka and Shaw getting forward and Bruno and Pogba in that midfield. Fred, before when he had his run in the team, he was doing a really good job of that, was covering for the fullback's runs, dropping in between the defenders to create that back three. So I think he could do that, and Bournemouth is probably the game to let him try to do that. Matic played 90 minutes. He played 60 against Norwich. I think the plan was to not play him against Norwich, and then it was like, well, we could bring on Matic and push Pogba and Bruno further up and get more attacking by doing this. So I think if you can rest him there, that'd be great. I wouldn't be shocked to see Williams come in for Shaw, because Shaw is the other one who's played 90 minutes. And you look at what Bruno was doing against Brighton. Shaw was bombing up and down that field too. And eventually you got to think he just needs a breather, because Ollie is, especially if you're playing that 3-2-5 where you're asking your fullbacks to be part of a back four, and then when we get the ball to be not part of the attack but part of the front five, that's a lot of running. So, you know, it's just not the end of the world, even though he only played an hour. We do have that extra day off. Bournemouth played earlier today. We played yesterday. It goes into Saturday, but I think Williams can hold his own in this game. If you know, if Bournemouth are frustrating you early, you probably need to go to Shaw. As Williams showed, he showed some problems when progressing the ball against Burnley. But then again, we didn't have Bruno, we didn't have Pogba, we didn't have ball progressors out there. So I think Williams can get the job done. And those are the two changes I think we would see. And again, I think the plan is, like, just get these guys. Like I was saying from the start of Project Restart, which is why I was very anti the team we put out against Tottenham. Play your best 11 from the start and blitz them and get them and play for an hour and get them off the field. You know, playing midweek and weekend isn't new to Manchester United. When you look at the Champions League and the Europa League and the League Cup, we've been doing it all season. We've been doing it for however many seasons. But there are no breaks, and if you could play 60 minutes rather than 90, it's very beneficial. Like, we know that the players can handle 90. But also, the season ends at the end of July. Then you're going and playing in the Europa League, and the new season right now is slated to start at the beginning of September. So you're not just thinking about this season, because there is no off-season break, really. So you don't want to burn players out for next season either.
No, and I'm inclined to agree with you. At this point, every game, especially when you look at the quality of opponent that we're going to be playing, it just needs to be a shock and awe campaign every single game. Go get your goals, get in, get out, you know, parachute your dudes that you need to get out of the game in the 65th, 70th, 75th minute. And, you know, it does make you wonder if any other academy players might have a shot towards the very, very far end of this thing, but at least for the time being, you know, you've got Andreas and Juan Mata, and you've got, you know, Fred or McTominay, whichever one doesn't start. I mean, you've got people who can come in and see the game out. I'm not going to say that necessarily, like, those combos of players are going to affect the game, but you'd like to think that if you can take a 2-goal lead or a 3-goal lead and you're starting to pull out your main contributors, those people will at least see this thing out and you walk out with the result that you want.
That's an interesting point, and I don't see it happening. And I wrote about this earlier, that, you know, if United drop Andre, like, with the extra two spots on the bench, if you're dropping Lingard and Pereira and you're basically telling them you guys can't even make the bench with not a 7-man bench, but a 9-man bench, that sends a big message to them about where they are in the pecking order. But I've also said that Lingard and Pereira are good at playing with the lead, and they're good at coming on the field to help see the game out. Can Tahith Chong do that? Is that something you want to put on the plate of James Garner? I don't know, because when you think about other times where players have gotten their debuts and come on in situations like that, you know, okay, you pull off Marcus Rashford and you bring on Tahith Chong, but who's behind him? Paul Pogba, Nemanja Matić, you know, your first choice midfielders. Yeah. Now, if you're going to pull off your best midfield, your best players after an hour, can you, because it was evident right away when McTominay came on and Andreas came on that the midfield was going to change. I would have brought on Fred either instead of McTominay or with McTominay, because Fred and McTominay are a better partnership than Matic and McTominay. And right away, Brighton sliced through that midfield like a knife going through warm butter, until Brighton took their best players off and said, all right, we're done too. So if you take, you know, all of a sudden, if you have your B team, so to speak, out there, you bring on four of your B team guys who we saw play against Tottenham. We saw them play against Norwich. There's like a huge drop in quality there. Can you afford to then give an academy kid a chance to be like, hey, see this game out?
Yeah. And I wonder if it's not so much they get their shot at this point, but at the very least, you know, do you let them, you start bringing them in, you can train with the first team, maybe even make the 18 or whatever the number is now. You're going to get benched and maybe you get a minute or two of play, but I just wonder if maybe.
Right. That's the other thing though, is that like, if God forbid, is where do you put them on the bench? Because if God forbid, you know, we only have, especially with Mason Greenwood now in the starting 11, there's really no game changer coming off the bench. Nope. Daniel James could be very useful if we're holding a lead. And, you know, like we saw him against Chelsea on the opening day of the season, if they're still coming at us, he can run back the other way at you and make you pay. If United, like, what, for argument's sake, let's say Bournemouth has a 1-0 lead and they're just going to sit back, bringing on Daniel James ain't going to solve shit. So, who, you know, you bring on Ighalo, but so far Ighalo has not proven to be the game changer off the bench. He's yet to score coming off the bench. Or I don't know if he hasn't scored off the bench. Or he hasn't scored in the Premier League yet. That's for sure. So, you know, you can't pull Juan Mata from the... You can't say, all right, we're going to put Taith Chong in place of Juan Mata on the bench. Because if something does go wrong, like, you need to bring Juan Mata on. And it's hard to say, like, well, we're going to pull Andreas Pereira or, you know, whoever that defensive attacking player is, or Dan James. You can't really pull them off because, well, if it's 3-0 and we want to get our best players off the field, like, we need players that are good at seeing the game off.
Well, I think there's probably a segment of Twitter who would probably argue that we should be subbing on Angel Gomez, who I guess we can get some of the house cleaning out of the way, too.
Right, well, we can't do that
anymore. He ain't around anymore, guys. Angel Gomez has officially left the building. Mason Greenwood.
What that section of Twitter could say, though, because I said this yesterday, was what really bothered me at the end of the game, and this is nitpicking, I know it. I am aware of that, but what really bothered me yesterday was the last 10 minutes of the game, United were playing this like weird, like sometimes we're going to attack and sometimes we're just going to stop and pass the ball around kind of game, and it made no sense to me. Go out when you've changed five players and you've got fresh legs on the field and Brighton are offering no threat going the other way, go out there and try to score another goal. You know, these are McTominay, James, Pereira. Those are players, Ighalo even, to a degree. Those are players that have a point to prove to the manager, to the fans or something. You know, there's a lot of fans that, you know, nobody likes Andreas Pereira. There's a lot of fans that are like Daniel James is overrated. Go out there and score a goal. Prove to your manager that you should be playing more. Otherwise, we're just going to see the same 11 week in, week out, especially right after the Norwich game where we saw that the B team stunk. Yeah. And it's important because cut down on that goal differential. This was an opportunity, you know, this isn't playing Liverpool or City or Tottenham or Leicester where you have a one goal lead. If you have a one goal lead, yes, see that game out, do that. But when you bring on five new players who have fresh energy and fresh legs, use it. They did it a couple of times, but at a couple of other times, you know, they had a break going and they had numbers in front of them. And then Pereira or McTominay would just stop and pass backwards and hold on to the ball. And all the while, Mason Greenwood and Aaron Wan-Bissaka are still flying and running all over the field. So if you're not going to attack, tell Wan-Bissaka, hey, stop wasting your energy. Hang back. Like, we're just going to see this game out. If Wan-Bissaka is still getting forward, attack. Because right now we're 3 points back of Leicester, but they've got a goal difference of
+9.
That's 9 better than ours. Yep. And we had this opportunity against Brighton where there was a fourth goal to be taken and the risk against it was minimal. It was minimal. Brighton were offering nothing going the other way. You could have cut that to take it 4, so then it would have been +9 coming into today. So now it's +8. And You know, let's say Leicester figures it out and they start winning all their games. You know, we could claw back a goal here, a goal there. If they win 1-0 and we win 3-0, that's two goals. But if they're 3 points ahead of us, we want to be able to overtake them on the final day of the season when we play them. If the goal difference is only 2 or 3, we could overtake them with a two-goal win. So we should be trying to claw that back because, you know, like Ollie said last week, we're not going after Chelsea in fourth. Like, we want to finish third. We're Manchester United. We're not content to do anything but the best, and we should always be striving for more. And, you know, again, a one-goal game or, you know, a two-goal lead against a dangerous team, I get it. Close up shop, see the game out. 3-0 against a Brighton team that hasn't threatened you all day and packed it up after the 75th minute, push on. You've got 5 players with fresh legs. Push on.
Yeah, and that would be my concern too, just looking at it. You know, United has a recent history of missing out on things because of goal difference. So don't put yourself in that situation. I mean,
it's rare and the odds of it happening are slim, but yeah. It's just something to account for and like avoid it if you can.
It's one of those things where, you know, it's on the checklist of like dotting your I's and crossing your T's. Like,
right.
Get your business done.
You know, like, you'll regret it if United finish level on points with Leicester and their goal difference is 2 or 1.
Yeah. The one positive thing that United's got going for them, too, though, as far as goal differential is concerned, 2 points behind Chelsea, +7 on a goal differential. So if it comes down to any kind of shenanigans with that, United does have a tiebreaker over Chelsea, not to mention we beat the shit out of them several times this year, so suck on that. But yeah, I like everything that Ollie says when he's saying we are going for third place, because at the end of the day, you know, Liverpool and Man City are going to finish 1 and 2. That sucks if United is not finishing third. I mean, it's if we want to set the example and the drawing our line in the sand of what the expectation is going to be next year, you know, push for that third spot now and, you know, put your money where your mouth is.
And it's a suck it to the haters of Ollie. Like, everybody knew Liverpool and Manchester City were on a different planet this year, except for those who were like, oh, they're 40 points behind Liverpool. And it's like, cool, Liverpool haven't lost a game all year. Like, everybody's 40 points behind them. But every rational human being knew that Liverpool and Manchester City were on a different planet than everybody else. So you better. Right, but be better than the rest. Just be the best amongst everybody else. And yeah, all right, we had less points than in many other Premier League years. And yeah, third place got fewer points. Who cares? Out of everybody else, we were better than them.
Yep. Well, I think the team talk at this point for the rest of the season, lads, it's Bournemouth. Lads, it's Aston Villa. Lads, it's Southampton. Lads, it's Crystal Palace. Lads, it's West Ham. You know,
and just
take care of business.
Marcus, look at Rashford before the game. Hey. You have 19 goals this year. Go get a 20th. Hey, Martial, you have 19 goals this year. Go get a 20th. We want 2 players with 20 goals. Then when they get those 20th goals, look at Mason Greenwood and go, hey, guys, this guy, he's got 13, 14 goals. Let's get him to 20 because we can.
Yeah, Adidas, go find some money under your couch and offer some extra incentives if we need to. Like, let's get some buckets. But, yeah, so to tie a bow on this Bournemouth thing, so that way we can go to an ad break and pay the bills here. Starting 11, final score prediction. What are you thinking?
De Gea. By the way, how funny. People saying David De Gea is back. Like, all right, he had a good game. Made the 2 saves that he had to make. Let's get a run of 7 or 8 games where he makes the 2 saves that he has to make.
I'd like to put my hand up and say David De Gea never left. But
he has. all right, so De Gea played Juan Bissaka, Lindelof, Maguire. No, I think he goes with Shaw. Shaw has been so
It's because Shaw got subbed off early, too, against Brighton, yeah, I think.
He's been so underrated during this run, and everybody is still shitting on him, and he's been very good, and he's got United have a very good record when he plays this year, which, again, I hate win percentage stats, and it's not because of Luke Shaw, but it's not a coincidence either. Midfield, I will go Pogba and Fred. I think this is the game you give Fred the chance, and then at Villa Park you bring Matic back in because I know it's I think Matic can handle playing right now, and I know it's enticing to keep running him back out there, but like, you'll regret that at the end of July or in August. And then, yeah, Greenwood, Bruno, Rashford, Martial.
Yeah.
I have a little concern that Greenwood played 60 minutes last week and 90 minutes yesterday. Given the way that Solskjaer has treated the youngsters and the two games in a week thing all season, it concerns me for Greenwood's start. But if there is one player who is, you know, a lot of players who have said, here's my resume, and that's why I deserve to be in the 11 game in, game out right now. But if there's one player that is showing game in, game out, you cannot drop me even to rest me, that's Mason Greenwood.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I've been so, so impressed with the way Mason Greenwood is played all season, but in the last couple games too, you know, you're starting to get those vibes of when Rashford had his breakout where you're like, all right, this guy's here to stay. And like you said, I mean, at this point, Mason Greenwood is undroppable, and it is going to take a little bit of, you know, a little bit of courage from Ollie to make the decision of choosing rest over, you know, yes, Mason Greenwood might give you the best opportunity in that position, but at the same time, like, let's make sure he's not running his legs into the ground.
And I thought he played his best game of the season against Sheffield, and then against Brighton, he was even better.
Yeah. So as far as my starting 11 is concerned, I'm pretty much in line with you. Wan-Bissaka, Maguire, Shaw. I think he might run Bailly out at center back. I think it would be odd to change up the center back partnership, especially when it's played so much in the Premier League. But I just wonder if, you know, he was giving Bailly a little bit of a tryout, and then also I just wonder if, you know, maybe Lindelof. I don't know. We'll see.
I just got this vibe. Of course, the two trending topics on Twitter right now that I see underneath this Chelsea thing are Kepa and Havertz. Like, that's got to just be Chelsea Twitter driving up the Kai Havertz rumors again. He was giving Bailly like that once a week thing before the lockdown, but that was partially because of Bailly's injury, partially because I don't think he was ready to break up Lindelof and Maguire in the league, and because we had non-league games to play.
Yeah.
So I do wonder if he would go to Bailly in the league here. He did get a chance in the FA Cup. He also was subbed off in the FA Cup, but that was more of an attacking move as we chased a goal, and we didn't need to have as many defenders on the pitch as we had.
Yeah.
I do wonder, but then you think about like what Brent said in the Buzzer Abe Slack today. This has been our most consistent defensive unit that we've had in the entire lifetime of David De Gea at Manchester United.
Yeah.
And that's really important, and it makes me think he's not going to change it up.
Yeah. Midfield, I think Fred should start, but I just have a feeling, you know, maybe just because McTominay is who McTominay is, you know, maybe he gets the lean over Fred. I think Fred is a better matchup in that midfield, but I just, you know, if we're playing the prediction of trying to be right versus what should happen, you know, I think maybe he might run McTominay out there. But everything else, 100% agree. I think it's going to be Greenwood, Fernandez, Rashford, Martial up top. You know, just go in, get your goals, get out. And with goals in mind, what is your score prediction against Bournemouth?
I'll go 3-0, because why change what isn't breaking?
3-0 FC. Just looking at the scoreline, Dwight Gale, Sean Longstaff, Miguel Almiron, and Valentino Lazaro all score goals against Bournemouth today. I rate Miguel Almiron a lot. Incredible player at Atlanta United. Sean Longstaff, you know, we've already spoke too much about Sean Longstaff this year. But other than that, like, Newcastle's not that good, and they put 4 on Bournemouth.
God, they're really not good. Not that good is overstating it.
If there is a game for us to replicate a Manchester City game, this is the one. Why not? I don't have Colin here to, like, bring me down. I'm saying 5-0. Go for it.
Yeah,
let's kick their ass.
They've already replicated Manchester City's formation, which is a teaser about what my piece is about.
Yes. So, all right. Pauly's 3-0. I'm 5-0. So we are destined to watch a 1-0 or a 1-1 snooze fest on Saturday as we celebrate our independence. And with that, we are going to take a short break, and we will be back with a voicemail. All righty, we are back. Nathan Heinchel here, hosting instead of Colin Dams, who decided he had more important things to do, joined once again by Pauly. Pauly, I understand we have a voicemail we need to respond to.
Yes, listener voicemails, another big week of voicemails and emails and tweets, and we've got our voicemail of the week right here, so I'll play it, then I'll recap it in case it's difficult for you to hear. It's a long one, so strap in.
Hello, the Busby Babe. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I have a question about United's transfer business this summer, or this transfer window. I think we can safely say at this point, based on the briefings we've seen, that Jadon Sancho and Jack Grealish are United's top two targets in the market. Now, my question is, even though both of those targets have been the worst kept secret for at least the last several months, if not in Sancho's case the last year, if that is indeed the case, then it's no guarantee that United will be able to afford both of them. As we've seen before, United's rumored financial reach doesn't always match their actual financial power. So, given where Sancho is expected to slot in on the right of United's attack, and where Grealish is likely to slot in as a squad player, an alternative to Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba, if United were only able to afford one of those two, which one should be more important, considering currently the quote-unquote hole in the first team on the right of the attack, given Mason Greenwood's development, and also the drop-off in quality when one or both of Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba is out of the team. So if we can afford one, Grealish or Sancho, which one is more important right now for next season? I yield my time.
So yeah, that went on for quite some time. Thank you for the call. We really appreciate it. We hope you call back and just speak a little faster. To sum it up, if we know that United's top two transfer targets are Jadon Sancho and Jack Grealish, but the caller is focused on how sometimes United's financial, they flex their financial muscles more than they can actually use their financial muscles. So if they can only have one, which one is your preference? Which one is more of a need given Mason Greenwood's breakout on the right side and how we see when Bruno Fernandes or Paul Pogba, when one of them goes out, the drop off in quality is tremendous.
So this question would have been infinitely easier to answer 2 weeks ago because I wouldn't have even taken a second to just blurt out Jadon Sancho. But I really like what I've seen Mason Greenwood doing on the right side recently. You know, a player who generally I always saw as more of a center forward. He looks to be somebody who can play, you know, in the center when you need him, on the right when you need him. And that kind of versatility really excites me. Because I think Greenwood, obviously he's shown this season, he's only going to play more. And he's going to continue to fit, you know, bigger and bigger into the plans. So it's tougher for me to not, you know, to say Jadon Sancho because of that. But I'm still inclined to say Jadon Sancho just because I like that everything, you know, what Sancho brings to his game. He's very technical on the ball. He's quick. Can put in a cross. Has played predominantly on the right side in Dortmund, which is where we want him to play in United, is to play on the right side. And that's just a position that we've been lacking for so long. And I just wonder if you're going to make a splashy signing between a Grealish or a Sancho, you go with Sancho, and then we find somebody who can be, you know, a good squad midfielder for a lot cheaper, and, you know, look into other leagues other than the Premier League, so we're not playing that Premier, paying the Premier League tax either. So, yeah, I think Grealish is a good player if we get both. I like it. I think I'm still going Sancho. I've wanted Sancho for so long, and I'm gonna roll with it because he has shown me nothing to make me uncomfortable with spending the money for him that Dortmund's gonna require.
So yeah, if I could only pick one, then my answer would be Kai Havertz.
he wasn't an option
because he'd check a lot of boxes.
Yeah, we like Kai Havertz. That's
now the other pretty known. The other thing is if United could. Here's the thing though, if United could only afford to sign one player, then Aston Villa cannot afford to keep Jack Grealish, and that price would be dirt cheap. Having said that, though, to answer the question, I would take Jadon Sancho just because if you get an injury, he can play. He plays on the right side. He also plays off the right now. He doesn't stick to that touchline. He still plays off the right so that Oscar Fakimi can come on and be that wing back. And Jadon Sancho is still effective at that. He moves around the front. He could play down the middle. He could play on the left. He moves around a lot the way. And we saw Bruno and Rashford and Greenwood all moving around all over the place yesterday. I mean, Greenwood's assist came from the left side. So Sancho could play anywhere across the front three. Grealish really could play down the middle or off to the left. And, you know, if you needed to play, like if Bruno or Pogba got hurt, you could play him in that eight role. But you could also play Bruno in that eight role. If Bruno gets hurt, Jadon Sancho could play in the 10 spot. If Pogba gets hurt, Jadon Sancho could play in the 10 and Bruno could play in the 8 if needed be. So he would tick all the more boxes, but also just sign Kai Havertz.
Well, and I think too, and we've spoken about this earlier in the year, it's one of the last great attacking front threes that United had was Ronaldo, Rooney, and Tevez. Now, let me qualify this so that way no one freaks out. I'm not saying
they're not listening anymore.
Yeah, they are not going to be like this.
The 2-minute voicemail, everybody hung up.
but, you know, that Tevez, Rooney, and Ronaldo could switch around the field at a moment's notice, and defenders could not key in on them. You know, they could play wherever they needed to. Rooney liked to play centrally. Ronaldo liked to play on the right. But, you know, they could sit there and interchange as much as they wanted. Viewers can't see how much I'm just waving my fingers. And so I think bringing on Sancho would have that similar effect. You know, Tony can play on the left if he needs to. I'd prefer him to play centrally. Rashford can go, you know, cut in whenever he wants. And then if you've got the threat of Martial up top, but then you've got Sancho and Rashford who can cut in, play wide, and then you've got those midfielders that are coming up and pressing from the center, it spreads the defense out so much that I think it starts to give us that edge that we've been missing, that edge that you get to see, you know, Manchester City play with, because they have wide attacking forwards who can go all the way out and spread that defense and then pump balls back into the center. And Sancho would be far and away, you know, the best possible playmaker we could have on the right. I think, you know, dribbling to the back line and then cutting back inside into the box and setting up plays like that. Unfortunately, it's not something that my son Daniel can do.
Don't throw out Wan-Bissaka, though. He's really, really turned it on offensively.
But so then I like that combination of, I mean, if you've got Sancho and Wan-Bissaka who are interchanging, you know, all of a sudden our right side is incredibly dangerous, and obviously our left side is already what our left side's been. So, yeah, it's just too hard for me not to say. If I have to choose between Sancho and Grealish, I'm choosing Sancho. You know, I'm choosing filet mignon over cube steak.
How about all the Jack Grealish isn't United quality people, or where would Kai Havertz fit in this squad, people? Hello, did you watch what we put out on the field against Norwich?
Yeah.
I mean, if it's not obvious that we need more, that we need first team quality on the bench. And
that's what made Sir Alex's team so successful, is because he was basically putting out, he could put out two different first teams you know, whenever he needed to, and they're going to be successful.
It's exactly what Ollie said yesterday when they talked about signing a new striker. And he said, look at who all the strikers that we signed when I was here, you know, Sheringham. We had me and York and Cole and Sher, and then we brought in Van Nistelrooy. We brought in Rooney. Like, you know, we always brought in somebody else. And if you can't handle that, because a team like Manchester United has to do that, you have to be bringing in top quality at all times. And I said this a few weeks ago, if you can't handle that, you don't deserve to be, you shouldn't be at Manchester United. Nope. You know, your place should never be secure. And again, you will play. Like, there are enough games, you will play. You know, if United are successful, they're looking to play 60 games a year. You need players for that, and you will play.
Everybody's going to get plenty of time, and we've got the perfect manager to preach that, because Solskjaer is famous for being, you know, maybe the most lethal substitute player of all time. I mean, he can instill that message into these guys. Like, look, you are going to get your opportunities, and because it's Manchester United, you're going to shine. You're going to get whatever endorsement deals you want. You're going to perform as long as you put in the work. So, yeah, right now at this point. And I mean,
everybody always, when they figure out that argument, they basically look at it like, okay, but where, like, why would he come here if he's not going to be in the first choice 11 if we're playing a cup final tomorrow? And they look at every game like it's a cup final, and it's just not. Nope. And even then, like, when you have a cup final, you know, someone's not going to make it, and that sucks. But you look back at that Ferguson team, and everybody rants and raves about Ji-Sung Park and how influential he was. And it's not just the, you know, Rooney did it, and the players talk about G and how important it was. And the fans will all tell you how important Ji-Sung Park was to making it to the final. Didn't even make the 18 in the final. And not because he wasn't deserving, but we played Chelsea. And Ferguson said, right, like, you're not the player for this game. And he said it killed him to leave him out because he was so influential, but didn't make the 18. Like, that. All right. So, yeah, if we are lucky enough to get to a cup final and we have to pick our first choice 11, then yeah, somebody might not make it. But if we were playing AC Milan in that final, Ji-Sung Park would have been on the field. Sometimes it's just there's 11 guys. Sometimes it's they're on better form than you. Sometimes it's they're a better matchup than you. But remember, like, if you're signing a player, yeah, we have a first choice 11 who's going to be out there on the first day of the season, but that's not necessarily who's going to be out there on the second day of the season. You know, it's not everything's a cup final, and the whole point of bringing in quality is so that when you make it to a cup final, everybody's fighting for their place, and you get 11 guys who are all on form.
Yep. Yeah. Anybody who is seeing issue in this, I would just have you picture the Boxing Day fixtures and the whole holiday period. Would you rather have Jesse Lingard come on as a substitute or Jack Grealish or Kai Havertz? And that's what we're trying to get at, is the reason why the teams ahead of us are so successful is because they are replacing talent with talent. They're not replacing, you know, their first 11 players with guys that might, you know, they could start for like West Ham.
You don't even need to look at the festive period. I mean, just look at the Norwich game. Would you rather have Jesse Lingard out there or Jack Grealish? You know, would that have helped? Would it help to have a Dennis Zakaria to call upon to come in and play that game? And then when you're up 3-0, you bring on Jack Grealish as a substitute. And, you know, on Saturday, you know, Jack Grealish then starts. And somebody else gets a breather. You know, Bruno Fernandes gets the breather, and there's no drop-off in quality. You know, yeah, I think that, like, when I said that they should rest Bruno for this Brighton game, because I thought Rashford and Martial and Pogba and Greenwood could carry the load, but there's no doubt that there'd be a drop in quality. I actually said Pogba should play as number 10 and Fred should come into the team, but there'd still be a drop in quality. You know, Fred is not as good at that position as Pogba is. So if you bring in a Jack Grealish, then you're bringing on a substitute where there's no drop in quality. He could start a game where there's no drop in quality. If you want to see Jesse Lingard and Juan Mata playing in the FA Cup game against Norwich, where we should kill them, and you want to see us go 120 minutes unnecessarily, then yeah, that's content. you're content to be where we are. And where are we? We're still in fifth place, fighting for fourth.
Yep, absolutely. So, all right, Ed, find some extra money somewhere. Bring in all the guys that we need, and let's go contend for a title, I think is
I mean, how much money are you making? You've got to be making money. That Lego is $300 a set. You got to be making money.
Dude, I still want that Lego so badly. Same. I mean, we're still, I mean, I'm technically, you know, we're back in the office at work, but a lot of us are still choosing to work from home. It's not mandatory for us to go in. And man, I do have time on my hands and I would love to build a Lego set. But yeah, so thank you again, caller, for providing your voicemail. We do hope to hear from you again. A couple other little bits of house cleaning. We'll even see if we need reaction, but of course, Inter and Roma have both announced that Alexis Sanchez and Chris Smalling's loans are being extended. However, I think Alexis's loan isn't being extended all the way into August, correct? It's like right before the Europa League would start back up, he might return to us.
Yeah, he won't be able to play in the Europa League, but basically Inter just don't want to pay him anymore.
Yeah, and Inter's like, hey, why don't you go be a cancer over in Carrington as opposed to...
Oh, he will not.
Do you think Ollie even lets him back into the, you know?
Like, I have a feeling everybody's going to get new ID cards like the day before he gets there because it's going to be a whole different lock system.
Oh, my God. It's like when you break up with your ex. And then speaking of Alexis Sanchez, too, today during Inter Milan's game where they scored 6 goals, I believe, Alexis Sanchez crossed the ball from the right side and found the waiting boot of none other than Ashley Young. So United players still crushing in Italy. So shout outs to them. Ashley Young, great servant to Manchester United. Been a lot of lukewarm takes about him in recent years, but glad to see he's still making a contribution somewhere because he seems like a good guy who was hiding the fact that he could grow a great head of hair, which is bizarre to me, but, you know, go off, son. So, yeah, do you have anything to add, Pauly, before we wrap this up? You got any other USMNT opinions or any predictions for the challenge tonight?
Oh, God. I hope it's not another episode of Big Brother.
Oh, my God. We'll have to do, like, some kind of recap episode or something. I had started writing this piece where I wanted to give the gravity of Wes versus Bananas what it deserved, and of course it just was not the week to be putting out a flipping piece like that, unfortunately, but we will have to talk about that sometime because that was a pretty epic moment in an otherwise I'd say fairly tepid season.
When I wrote that challenge comparison to United players piece, my plan really was to cover every episode like it was sports and like the way Nathan started doing for Top Chef. And I am so happy I did not do that.
Yeah. If there's anything I've learned from, you know, having to generate content out of thin air and working during a pandemic, it is don't make the things that you use as an escape as potential content that feels like work, because all of a sudden it doesn't feel like an escape. And, you're still only 5 episodes into Top Chef.
Manchester United.
Yeah. So, say the least. If there's the one escape that you have, if you can make it work, Manchester United. It's a religion. It's a passion. Top Chef, The Challenge, maybe just watch those. Don't write about them. But, all right.
Take care of business.
Yep. Well, I think that is enough for today. So, we will wrap this up.
Yeah, look out for us. We're going to try to live stream it.
Yes.
You could hear our thoughts in real time.
Yes. We've got that coming up this weekend. Manchester United versus Bournemouth, Saturday, July 4th. I got to take a break from watching Independence Day all day so I can watch a Manchester United game. That's inconvenient for me. You know,
really convenient that it's at 10 a.m., though.
Yeah, I think I might watch the Bill Pullman speech like 6 times before we start that game. But, yeah, so... For Pauly and I, the game's going to kick off 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Colin, who lives in the past, it'll be 9 a.m. like a nerd. And for the rest of most of our listeners, you know, it'll probably be normal time for you guys. So shout outs to you. But yes,
we call us up right afterwards. Something Busby Bay. I forget the first 3 numbers. That's a bad job by me. Give us your immediate reaction.
Yeah, while you're pulling that up, we are looking to do a live stream, live reaction show that we'll stream to the Busby Babe Facebook page and the Twitter page. So if you get a chance, join us. Watch the game with us, live react, send us your questions, your comments. I don't know, you can, whatever you want. You can just complain about how we don't write about football on our football blog, and we'll answer those too, I guess.
Hey, I write about football, so.
Meanwhile, I'm like chief nonsense officer, I think. Actually, I think that might be my title in Slack.
You could definitely complain about how it takes us 5 minutes to sign off of a podcast, though.
Creator of nonsense at the Busby Babe. But yes, anyway, so let's get out of here. Paulie, always a pleasure to talk Manchester United with you. Can't wait to have Colin back in here as well, so that way the Busby Bays are complete. So you got anything you need to plug, social media handle, anything like that?
No, I'm ready for dinner.
All right. Well, I've been Nathan Heinschel, at Nathan is Red on Twitter. Give me a follow, and auf Wiedersehen.